Hello everybody, this is the translation of Pascal Girard's message for April the 11th. To be a Christian is not about living without disputes and conflicts. Fortunately, you might think, because we are not always on this path. We still need to approach life in a way that corresponds to what Jesus taught us and what he himself experienced among men. That's why the title I've given this message today is not Learning to Avoid Conflict. It is learning to live being reconciled. I will not give you instruction on how to defend your point of view, your decisions, or justify your behaviour in the relationships you have with others, but instead I will try to talk about how Jesus would treat the people with whom we have, say, difficulty. I will be reading the passage from Matthew chapter 18, verses 21 to 35. Let us start with the first two verses. Then Peter came to Jesus and asked, "Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Up to seven times?" Jesus answered, "I tell you, not seven times, but 77 times." This is the introductory text to a parable that we will recall later. This text draws us into a trap, which it then closes without mercy. It will become a mirror in front of us. We will learn from this parable how to live being reconciled. Jesus shows us the only way to live forgiveness, not just talking about it, but living it. In John chapter 13, verse 35, Jesus said, "By this everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." And you might add to this verse yourselves, and by the fact that you can forgive one another, that you live reconciled. In recent years, I have had to experience what it is like when we Christians treat each other without reconciliation and without love. Some of us have little experience that in all places people are not always able to get along. We are not ready to approach one another and to experience reconciliation. Reflecting over the years, I too must wonder where I have been mean to my siblings, where I have not reached out to them, where I have wronged them even, unintentionally, involuntarily, I hope. We need to learn over and over from Jesus what it means to be reconciled to him. The end of chapter 18 of the Gospel of Matthew does this in three stages, which I would now like to retrace in what follows. Number one, do I have to forgive so many times? Peter is the one who always asks crucial questions and who asserts his positions without complexity. He is the image of who we sometimes are or what we would eventually like to be. He is often described in the Gospels as the most human disciple of the circle of 12. And so it is in this text. Today it is the question of forgiveness. And during this discussion between Jesus and his disciples, Peter approaches his master and asks a question. Then Peter came to Jesus and asked, "Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Up to seven times?" Good question. It even seems extravagant when you put yourself in context. The Israelites knew how many times to forgive a brother. Three times. In the Talmud, Yoma 87a, we read, "If a brother sins against you the first time, the second time, and also the third time, you have to forgive him. It's God's will. But if he sins yet again, you are not bound by a duty to forgive." And we can assume that Peter knew this rule. To forgive seven times is to protect yourself from any fault. It is also to do even better than what is asked. Peter was a good student, certainly. Super Peter, seven times is really great. But Jesus did not react as Peter expected. No, Jesus answered him, "I am not telling you to go up to seven times, but up to 70 times seven times." 7 times 70 equals 490 times. 490 times, in other words, all the time. And again, I'm sure that Jesus did not want to say that one should not forgive his brother the 491st time. With 3 times, or even 7 times, as Peter suggests here, it's easy to keep accounts, remember every opportunity to forgive, and therefore know whether I still need to forgive or not. With a number as gigantic as 490, this is no longer possible. Wait, last time I counted 122, right? In fact, Jesus said, you must always forgive your brother. It's better to stop counting now. Just as Peter was probably surprised by this statement from Jesus, perhaps we feel the same way today. Always forgive over and over again, even to people who are so complicated, everyone says it, with whom I have had such a difficult relationship all the time. Is it possible? It's inhumane. Is it possible? No, that's not possible. It is inhumane. Yes, because without God's help and without discerning the reason why we should do it, this request of Jesus cannot be met. But Jesus himself shows us how to understand all of this with a parable that can give us the answer. And here we can see that the context is important. Without these two verses, the real meaning of the parable cannot be understood. We must remember that Jesus is telling the parable that I am going to read to you now to clarify Peter's question. How am I going to be able to forgive 7 times 70 times? The mercy of the king. Let us first examine the first part of the parable, which deals with the king's mercy. Verses 23-27. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. As he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 bags of gold was brought to him. Since he was not able to pay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay the debt. At this, the servant fell on his knees before him. "Be patient with me," he begged, "and I will pay back everything." The servant's master took pity on him, cancelled the debt, and let him go. This is not, strictly speaking, a settling of scores as one might hear it today. A king at the time regularly held audiences to hold his officials to account. They brought in a senior official who owed him a considerable sum, inconceivable to ordinary people. If I were to convert this amount in today's currency, I would say it's around 100 million euros. 100 million. And even if this calculation is too imprecise, it is safe to say that Jesus is naming an astronomical sum here. Let us remember this. And it is completely understandable that the king gets angry when he hears that this sum will not be returned to him. The king then orders something that seems extremely cruel to us today. He has the family of this official taken away to sell them as slaves. This is how business was settled back then, and debts were paid by default. The situation of this servant is desperate. He has a debt of 100 million, and he has not the slightest chance of repaying this debt. This is when the incredible happens. The king has mercy. He frees the servant. That alone would be pretty sensational. But he also frees him from his debt completely. It's incredible. The interpretation of this parable is quite easy in this case. As forgiveness is mentioned just before, this parable is inscribed in the picture. God is the king. At some point he will call us to account. What will we be guilty of against him or against other people? The over-indebted servant is us. Debt, sin, is all around us. We are so guilty before God that we will never be able to repay even a tiny part of our debt. In fact, we are hopelessly lost, and God has the right to punish us. But he doesn't. He forgives us. He forgives us our debts and asks nothing in return. The servant in the parable has nothing to do in return. He does not need to work to pay off his debt, to pay it off or to offset it. The king forgives him everything, just like that. It is the same between God and us. Without anything in return, God frees us from our debt, absolves us from our sin, without us having to work, pay back or sell anything, for free. The thing that must impress us in this parable is this generosity of the king, the madness of it. Here is the first explanation for what Jesus proposed to Peter at the beginning of the text. It is only because God has forgiven us that we can forgive. It is not by our own strength that we will be able to forgive 70 times 7 times. We are quite incapable of it. What a beautiful parable, which goes even further. What about us? It is on this last point that we now see why this text is so hard for us. Until now, the story has been so clear, so understandable, so plausible, so beautiful. God is the King who is full of grace, merciful, infinitely generous. The servant with many debts is us, and this debt is our sin, which God forgives us. A great parable. But it goes even further. And if we were the servant in debt in the first part of the parable, we remain that same servant in the second part of the parable. We don't have the ability to change our roles, unfortunately. And this is where it gets awkward. I'll read the second part of the story. Verses 28 to 34. But when the servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 silver coins. He grabbed him and began to choke him. "Pay back what you owe me," he demanded. His fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him, "Be patient with me and I will pay it back." But he refused. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. When the other servants saw what had happened, they were outraged and went and told their master everything that had happened. Then the master called the servant in. "You wicked servant," he said. "I cancelled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you?" In anger, his master handed him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all he owed. We can't understand this attitude. This guy doesn't give his king what he owes. Out of pure mercy and kindness, he is not punished for this crime. And when he is faced with this person who owes him the equivalent of maybe 100 euros, a very small amount compared to what he owed himself, he acts unspeakably. He's throwing the poor guy in jail. And it is here that the trap closes on us, because this uncompromising servant is me. This is how I act sometimes too. God forgave me everything, an infinite debt. I easily recognize him. And how should I behave towards my neighbour then? I think of situations in which I was not ready to forgive myself, for important things and also for trifles. I'm no better than this servant. The more I think about this parable, the more relevant it seems to me. If I'm being honest, the things that I resented, the things that I couldn't or didn't want to forgive are sometimes insignificant. Someone looked at me askance. Someone wasn't very gracious. Sometimes, again, it's awkwardness, involuntary, even if it hurts. Of course, there have been times when I have been hit with harsh words. But what is this guilt compared to what Jesus forgave me? So how can we learn to live a reconciled life? The motivation to live reconciled only comes from the action of the grace of God in my life. I must have understood this action of God in order to be able to forgive those who would have been found guilty towards me. In other words, I must understand what God has done for me. Otherwise, I cannot live a reconciled life. How many times do we think that we are not a bad person and that Jesus is lucky to have us on his team? Yes, I am a sinner, and yes, I need forgiveness, of course, but I'm not that bad. If we think so, we will have a hard time being indulgent towards our fellow men, because we don't really live out the forgiveness of God. we will never be able to repay any of our debt. We were a lost cause and we didn't deserve anything. But then Jesus comes and he pays for everything. Not only that, but it makes a debtor like us a child of God. He makes us a new creation. We are not only pardoned, we are washed. By believing it, knowing it, understanding it, then we can live a reconciled life, as Jesus teaches here and wants for us. Obviously, to forgive, to live a reconciled life, is also to renounce one's rights. In the parable, the small debt of 100 euros was real. The other man really owed him something. And so it is in real life. When people become beholden to us, it's real. This is where I want my due. My request is justified. But then this feeling that I have just described must set in. Jesus, I renounce my rights because you renounced yours. Jesus, I renounce my right, and I am reconciled because you yourself have reconciled me to your Father. And again, it is first and foremost a decision. A reconciled life does not happen by chance. I have to decide. Once I understand that God has forgiven me, that I have this in mind, I must decide to forgive too, to live a reconciled life towards others. And this is the question I must pass on now. Did we understand that we owe 100 million euros to the King, to God, and that God gave us the grace of this enormous sum? And again, do we know that other people are also indebted to us? So far, all is well. But the crucial question is how to deal with these situations. Do we want to live reconciled? Do we want to forgive, even if we have to give up our rights? Do we want to decide to follow this path? Are we ready to grant forgiveness? Perhaps we could be inspired by a prayer read on the Feast of Forgiveness, the Kippur. Yes, I take the resolution. I forgive those who have wronged me, whether they have done it under duress or voluntarily, inadvertently or deliberately, whether they have harmed me by their words or their actions. To all, whoever they are, I forgive. Let no one suffer your harshness because of me. Amen.